Good morning again. Well, in recent times I've been going through the book of Matthew, the Gospel of Matthew. And it is generally recognized and accepted that this is the Gospel that is directed to the Jews. But what came out very clearly, more specifically, is that in the Gospel of Matthew, Jesus is presented as the new Moses, and that is his main role, and he is to become the new leader of God's people. And at the end of the Gospel, he sets up the new leadership in the disciples, with him as the head. So, when you read the Gospel of Matthew, just sort of scroll to it, not the whole thing, but at the beginning of the Gospel, after he's being baptized, obviously the baptism reminds of the time when the Israelites went through the Red Sea, they were baptized in the water, and they came out. And the first thing they did was they went into the desert, and that's what happened with Jesus. After he was baptized, he went into the desert, and he spent there 40 days. But not just Israel, also Moses, when they were in the desert and came to the mountain. Moses was the one who came to meet with God and spend some time with God, and he was there for 40 days. And he wasn't eating or drinking, and this is the same experience that Jesus has, and he came into the desert. He spent 40 days in God's presence. Well, he was tempted by the devil, but they were just God there, nobody else. And he fasted for 40 days. When he came back from the desert, very soon after that, we have a couple of chapters, 5, 6, and 7 in the Gospel of Matthew, where Jesus comes and sits down on the Mount of Blessing, and he brings his message from the desert, or from the mountain. So just like Moses, when he came back from the mountain after 40 days, he brought the law of God and he presented it to God's people. So Jesus came after 40 days from the desert, from that similar experience, and he brought his law to his people. He sat down on the Mount of Blessing and he told them all kinds of things that's very difficult to follow. He told them the Ten Commandments are difficult to follow, I'll tell you now. And then he expanded, talking about adultery, not only as a physical act, but something happens in the mind. And then murder, not something just as a physical act, but as anger in the heart that's cherished. And this is how Jesus is portrayed as the new Moses. Part of this whole talk on the Mount is also the Lord's Prayer. And it's interesting that it begins by Jesus instructing his people to pray to their Father, our Father. And this is not something Jesus invented, because in the books of Moses you have this statement also, I think it's in the 5th Deuteronomy, and God says through Moses, I have carried you through the desert like a father carries his child. So that's the same image that Moses presented to the people. Jesus tells his people in the first century that's the way that they should approach God. Now there's plenty of stuff going on through the Gospel. It's the longest of the Gospels, so I don't go all the way through that. Just the beginning, how it starts. You see, Jesus really is presented like Moses. And then towards the end of the Gospel, when he comes to Jerusalem, just skip the whole story, we come to the last week of his life, last 7 days of his life on earth. And we jump into the chapter 21 of Matthew. And there, now when they drew near Jerusalem and came to Bethphage at the Mount of Olives, Jesus sent two disciples and saying, go into the village opposite you, and immediately you will find a donkey, and so forth. And they brought the donkey, and he was sat on the donkey. And then in verse 9, As Jesus was entering Jerusalem on the donkey, then the multitudes who went before and those who followed cried out, saying, Hosanna to the Son of David! Blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord! Hosanna in the highest! Now this statement expresses the expectations of people. All people, his disciples, the multitudes, most people, they shouted. And the key word is David. Why David? Because, you know, when we look at the past, we always look at the past with sentimental glasses and remember the good times and forget. And when you say David for them, that's the peak of their history, the highest point in their history. Because at the time of King David, the Israel was the largest kingdom in the area, the largest territory, they ruled, they're in charge. They're not ruled by anybody else, but they were the ones to rule that territory, the Middle East. And these are their expectations now. The king is coming, the son of David. What does that mean? It means the son of the great king. It means it's a prince who is to become the great king like David. And once again, we'll be at the pinnacle of our power, peak of our power, and things will be great once again. But the question is, why did they shout Hosanna to the Son of David? When, what was the timing of this statement? Remember, he was entering Jerusalem, coming, it was the last,
Passover,
yes. The last 7 days of his life on earth. It's the 7 days of the Passover service for God's people. What does that have to do with David, the Passover service? Anything to do with David?
Didn't he go into the temple and get bread and eat?
It's pre-David, isn't it?
It wasn't really not much to do with David's Passover.
It's Moses, isn't it?
It's to do with Moses, doesn't it? Because the Passover is the commemoration of God's act of liberation of God's people from an oppressive political power, the kingdom of Egypt. Oppressive king, Pharaoh, means king, isn't it? So, this whole idea of the Passover was the idea that God will liberate his people from an oppressive king, and he will be their king personal, God, not an earthly king. But here they're praying for or expecting another king like David. And you have to rewind this whole film and the story and go back and realize these are their expectations. This is what they're born with, their traditions, what they've been taught, what they've sort of figured out. Sounds good. But was it ever God's will that Israel would have a king?
No.
Oh, that was the time of Samuel, after all those nasty things happening during the time of Judges, and say, we have enough, we want to have a king like everybody else, like my neighbor has a king, this neighbor has a king, I want to have a king too. And they had a king, and that was never God's will. Because they're established as the nation of priests. God told them, you are a royal priesthood. Yeah? And Peter says that in Revelation, we find that also we are a royal priesthood, each one of us. It's the nation that's been set up in a different way. They didn't have a political system as such, like the other nations. They didn't have a king. They had just a prophet, Moses, leading them. He wasn't a king. God was their king. But they wanted something different. And all these nations that we read about in the Bible portrayed as beasts, like Babylon and Rome. The beast nations, God told them from the beginning, you're not to be the beast nation, you're to be the priest nation. So, the beast nation is a heavy political oppressive power. The priest nation is a very low-key, simple arrangement, and that's how God's people are supposed to function. But through the history, things changed, and people forgot at this time, and they shouted, Hosanna to the Son of David, that actually, even though David was a, you know, decent king, God never wanted then to have a human king. He wanted to be the king himself. So, their expectations, soon they were to learn that their expectations were misguided. And those who accepted Jesus, they had to adjust and readjust their understanding, their beliefs, and their expectations if they wanted to continue to follow him, especially his disciples. So this is the context. And what Jesus is trying to do, this will all be leading to the Passover that he does, is he is taking his people back to the beginning, to the simple things that he arranged for Moses. And he is about to rearrange his people into that simple setting where they're led by a prophet. In this case, Jesus is the new prophet, and the disciples that he sets up there to become the new leaders of God's nation. So, as you continue to read after chapter 21, towards the end of the chapter 1, Jesus says to the people, have you never read in the scriptures? Verse 42, the stone which the builders rejected has become the chief cornerstone. So he tells them, you are the builders, you think you build this up, all the leadership of Jewish nation, and says, I am the stone, you are rejecting me. That's not going to work out, because if you pull out the cornerstone, everything will crumble down. And that's why he tells his disciples in chapter 24, and they say, wow, look at this great temple. He says, not one stone will remain on the stone here, because if you pull the cornerstone out, everything will crumble down. But before we get to chapter 24, in chapter 23, Jesus makes a very interesting statement. Chapter 23, verse 1. Then Jesus spoke to the multitudes and to his disciples, saying, the scribes and the Pharisees sit in Moses' seat. They sit in his seat. Do what they tell you to do, but don't do what they do, because they're hypocrites. They come up with all kinds of things and rules and regulations, but don't do what they do, because they're hypocrites. And he says they have sat in the Moses seat. So this is the key statement again, because he is presented as the new Moses. He doesn't say that directly, because he's a very humble person, isn't Jesus? But it's actually my seat. It belongs to me. They're not meant to sit in my seat, but okay. And then he tells, we have the seven woes or curses against the Pharisees and Sadducees and the scribes. And you continue to read chapter 23. Seven woes or curses upon the leadership of his nation. It's a bit like seven plagues in the book of Revelation that are coming that just before the new order is established. Or the 10 plagues in Egypt that happened just before God's people are liberated. And then chapter 24, the disciples show Jesus the temple, and he says, not stone be left here unturned. And do not expect anything like the kingdom of David again, because I'll tell you what's going to happen. No, you don't have any kind of life that could be described as pursuit of happiness or anything like that, but there'll be troubles in natural world, and there'll be famines, there'll be wars, there'll be persecutions. And these things they're doing to me, so don't be surprised if they do them to you. It's going to be difficult. There'll be nothing like the King of David or the Kingdom of David to be experienced by God's people. Not until I come at the very end. Then, when my kingdom comes, everything will be good again. And then again, just around that same time, that's in chapter 23 again, after just before he pours out his woes upon the Pharisees, Jesus tells his disciples, chapter 23, verse 11, but he who is greatest among you shall be your servant, and whoever exalts himself will be humbled, and he humbles himself will be exalted. And then, but woe to you, scribes and Pharisees. And he tells his disciples then, verses 5 to 10, do not call people rabbi, do not call them father, do call yourself teachers, because you are all brothers, and I am your teacher, I am your rabbi. God is your father. So he's preparing his disciples here now. He's saying, this leadership that we have now, they're no good. You are to become the new leadership of this nation, but you're not to be driven by the same principles as they are. You're to be humble, and you're to be guided by the principles of God's kingdom. Also, around the same time in chapter 22, the Pharisees come with him with the questions. They try to trap him, and he makes some interesting statements about the image of the coin of Caesar, and they just don't know what to say, can't match his wisdom. Then the Sadducees come, they try to trap him, and he tells them, you know, about marriage and what happens with marriage after you die in heaven and stuff like that. And he tells them, you don't know what you're talking about. You are mistaken, not knowing the scriptures nor the power of God. So he basically tells the leadership, you don't know the scriptures, you don't know God's will, you don't have the God's spirit, you don't have the power of God, you're spiritually impotent, you're not competent to lead my people again. Doing all these things in preparation for his disciples to become the new leaders, with him as the key prophet, like the new Moses, and his disciples, the 12 disciples, to lead Israel again. And they're to become the kingdom of priests, not the beast kingdom, but the priest kingdom. A simple setup that God wanted from the very beginning, before things got complicated. And then if you read into the chapter 26, they come into the room upstairs to celebrate Passover service and remind themselves of the time when God liberated his people from Egypt. So it's all about Moses, and he's taking them back now, and he tells them now, remember when people put the blood on the doorways and the doorposts? It was the symbol of their liberation and salvation. And now that he breaks the bread, he gives them wine, says, this is, we are doing something similar here again, because this is my blood that is to provide the second exodus, or the next exodus, or the second liberation from oppression. Now the different thing is, the first time in Egypt, their liberation or their exodus was liberation from an oppressive king, oppressive political power. This second liberation or exodus was not to be liberation from political powers, but from an oppressive religious system. And he gets rid of it. He gets rid of the Pharisees, scribes, Sadducees, and even the temple is gone. Yeah? I am the center of all these things. So, through his renewed Passover service, which he called the communion service, Jesus says, I am taking you out of this spiritual Egypt, not physical Egypt. And he's taking them out of the religion that got corrupted, and he's liberating them into a new state led by the Spirit. And you could say that the first exodus was physical and the second exodus was spiritual. The first one is liberation from political oppression, the second one from spiritual oppression. But then, as God's people do throughout history, things happen again and again, and God's people sway from idolatry to legalism, from legalism to idolatry, and they keep missing the mark, which is Jesus Christ, the center of all things, and the relationship with him. And the story in the gospel ends there, but the untold part of the story that's known to us, but not recently stated, is that there will be third exodus, or third liberation. And that's really it, mentioned not in great detail in Matthew 24, just in a few verses. The first liberation from Egypt was liberation from political oppression. The second liberation, when Jesus came, he died on the cross, sent the Spirit, he liberated his people from religious oppression. But the third one and the last one will be complete. Be both physical and spiritual when Jesus comes. All the systems in this world will crumble. All the political systems, all the religious systems, it will all crumble. Nothing will stand. Nothing will stand in the end. And he will provide the final liberation for his people from everything that oppresses us, spiritually and physically, politically and religiously, in any way. And you can talk about, if you talk about physical oppression, you can talk about political oppression, you can talk about physical illness, pain, suffering, spiritual pain, spiritual suffering, all these things will come to an end when Jesus provides a complete, whole, final and full liberation on his third exodus, or the third liberation, which we call the second coming of Christ. And this is time that we are looking forward to. Thank you.